Hello, friends. Welcome to Inks and Issues, a book club style podcast for comics. I'm your host, Jonah Gregory.
In the name of the moon, I'm Kieran Bennett.
And today our guest host is
Brittany Gregory.
Yes, Brittany's been on the show for Conan and what, anything else? I don't remember.
Yeah, but I don't remember what.
Yeah, well. And things. You are a person that I've known for a very long time at this point, considering we've been married for 15 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
So most of you probably know Brittany at this point. So today we are doing a little book some of you may have heard of called Sailor Moon. And we will be covering the first arc in Sailor Moon. Who has seen or read this before?
Me.
Not me. I've seen bits and pieces, and I had read like the first volume 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and was like, this is cool. I should read more. And then I didn't.
Classic. Wow, I love this, and I can't wait to never, ever consume any more of it.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, we got the itch to, you know, go back to some more classic mangas like Naruto we've done in the past.
And yeah, look forward to our 7-part spectacular coming out soon where we just read the rest of Naruto.
Yeah, it'll be a good time for all. Speaking of Naruto, plug for our friends doing Naruto Reviewdo, where they are actually going through every episode of Naruto. Yeah. Speaking of things that you'd have to be a crazy or a crazy genius to want to do. Ooh. So it's been a minute. We have a dog now, as you probably can hear in the background. We may have to have a few breaks where we, you know, get that taken care of. But yeah, I guess since we got a lot to get through, we'll just jump right in.
So before we go straight into the recaps, I do have a few fun facts about the old Sailor Moon. So obviously, needless to say, Sailor Moon is by far and away one of the biggest manga and anime titles in the world. And for those who somehow have never heard of it, it is a shoujo manga published from 1991 to 1997 in Nakayoshi magazine. And the full title is Pretty Soldier Sailor Moon. And it has spawned an anime series, 3 animated feature films, a TV special, 3 short films, another anime series, stage musicals, novels, video games, theme park attractions, which I was very surprised to discover, and also, of course, an ice skating show.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Mm-hmm. So the author, Naoko Takeuchi, she actually graduated from Kyoritsu University of Pharmacy as a licensed pharmacist and actually wrote her thesis, which is called The Heightened Effects of Thrombolytic Actions Due to Ultrasound. But that wasn't really like working out for her, so she decided to become a manga artist instead.
Natural career path.
Yeah. Natural career path, obviously. So what I thought was really interesting is she had originally only envisioned one storyline for Sailor Moon and actually just wanted to kill all of the characters off at the very end of that storyline. But her editor was like, hey, this is really popular and people really, really like it. So could you not kill off all of your characters so that we can keep writing more stories about Sailor Moon? And also at the same time, Toei Animation, who were making the anime of Sailor Moon, were like, yeah, you know, we totally agree with that. If you could not kill all your characters and just keep writing storylines for us to make anime out of, that would be really cool. Now, obviously, this was the correct decision because as of 2012, which is the 20th anniversary of Sailor Moon, the manga has sold 35 million copies worldwide. And taking into account all of its merchandising and other things that it has spawned, Sailor Moon has generated $13 billion in merchandising sales.
So clearly, always go with the author and let them kill off all their characters.
Yep, kill all of your characters.
It does explain why the ending of this one is easily could have been the end of everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So those are your fun facts.
Excellent. All right, so we'll get into, we're reading, I guess, 2 different versions with, I assume, the same translation or, no, because this one is a new translation, right?
Yes, so
Brittany and I read, go ahead.
We've been reading the Eternal Edition. I have bought Sailor Moon in its many forms many times at this point.
Including?
So I have the new versions, which are the Eternal Editions, which are new translations. So they're new translations, new formatting. They're very pretty. Very, very pretty. High quality versions of the books. They're larger than normal manga sized. So
they're like graphic novel size.
They're like graphic novel size. They're nice. Like, I was very excited when I saw that we're going to release these. I'm like, oh, so shiny. But I also have the classic mangas. I have most of the comic book form that were released in the 90s.
Yeah, stateside.
Stateside. They released them as like actual comic books, like Marvel and stuff. Yeah, like floppies. Does. Yeah. And I have most of those. I have... let's see. I also have like digital editions. So I've rebought this series a number of times, but this one that we've been reading is the new translation.
Right. Which, except for Karen.
Yes. I did not read that version. I read the, just like regular manga version from Kodansha Comics, because I could not afford the Eternal Edition.
They are very pricey. They're a lot more expensive for you.
They're very nice, though. They are nice. And if you do like Sailor Moon, you should totally get them. But, well, if you like Sailor Moon, you probably already fucking got them. But that is not the version that I read. I read the first three volumes.
Right.
They aren't even fully out. They're still releasing them right now. So they still have several volumes to go of these editions.
Right. So if you're reading along at home, we read volumes 1 and 2 in the Eternal Editions or volumes 1 through 3 in the regular edition. Because those cover the same material.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump into, I guess, either versions, volume 1. and we'll start with Act 1. We are introduced to our protagonist, Usagi Tsukino, who is doing the classic anime person who, well, anime girl, usually, that's late for school and has to run out of the house. And this time, though, she's not just doing the thing where she's running with a piece of toast in her mouth because she's late for anime school. She sees a cat that has like a thing on his forehead. So she's like, oh, you poor kitty. He has like a band-aid across it. So she goes up and takes the bandage off, and it's revealed that underneath is a crescent moon. And she thinks it's just a weird bald spot. And she's like, oh, you poor kitty, you have a weird bald spot. And then runs off to school. And it turns out she's also a terrible student and gets really bad test results. So to feel better, she goes shopping, you know, the whole, what do they call that? Retail therapy.
Yeah.
Again, to feel better about herself. Mm-hmm. So they go to this new jewelry store and, realizes that she won't be able to ask for anything from her parents because she got a 30% on her test, which is pretty bad. And she's correct. If I were her parent, I'd be like, no, let's talk about these grades first. Yeah, actually. Yeah.
I feel like 30%, you know, like, 30% out of 40 is good. 30% of 100 is bad. I think we can all agree.
So instead, she decides to go play video games at an arcade because this is set in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So arcades are still alive and kicking.
they're still open.
Yep. So she gets home and the cat from earlier shows up again and starts talking. She introduces herself as Luna and tells Usagi that she is a guardian of love and justice. And, you know, if a cat with a weird moon bald spot told you that you were a guardian of love and justice, I would just take it at face value. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'd be like, absolutely. No, you are bang on the money there. I've always thought that.
So they you know, have some back and forth, and the cat Luna is trying to explain to the, you know, very sweet but kind of thick Usagi like what's going on, and eventually it leads to just needing to be shown like, hey, there's this whole thing where you can transform and stuff and fight crime, and by crime of course we mean evil people from the moon. Because
the biggest Sailor Moon. Crime.
Moon, yes. Space crime.
Space crime.
So it turns out that there's more going on at the new jewelry store than they thought. So Usagi and Luna go to investigate, and they find out that the owner of the store has been replaced by a monster that drains people's energy, which is a theme that we will see throughout this series, that monsters like to use overly elaborate, weird schemes to drain human energy.
Incredibly elaborate schemes.
Yeah. They are Rube Goldberg machines to drain energy from humans. But using the power of crying and falling over, Usagi is victorious and introduces herself as the pretty guardian in a sailor suit, guardian of love and justice, Sailor Moon. And as she's leaving, she runs into a man in a tuxedo and a mask called Tuxedo Mask. And he says that he's looking for someone called the, or something called the legendary Silver Crystal. And then he's out. Common thing with Tuxedo Mask is he will show up for like a 2 seconds, then be like, "And now I'm off to save another city," and or whatever. he shows up for 2 seconds, takes all the credit, and leaves.
Yep.
Typical man. And that's the end of Act One.
Yeah,
Kieran, was this? You said this was your first time with reading Sailor Moons.
This wasn't just my first time reading Sailor Moon. This is my first time consuming any Sailor Moon content whatsoever. Because I've never.
So what did you think of?
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. I really enjoyed the start where it was like, this is Usagi. She's 14. She's a high schooler. She's dumb as fuck and really lazy and doesn't like school, but loves video games. And I was like, I can respect that kind of honesty in a character.
Yeah, she does not shy away from any of these facts at any point.
Or the fact that she's a crybaby. No. I mean, the very first page, they established that I'm kind of a crybaby, her thing. She is a crybaby. Yeah. I mean, even like one of her moves later is the like siren, like ultrasonic thing that she gets from her headpiece because she's crying and her shrieking cries are turned into ultrasonic waves.
Yeah, that's how she defeats the villain.
That like disrupt a bunch of stuff. So then she can use her tiara.
Yeah, I do enjoy how like upfront they are about how like, you know, she is Sailor Moon. She is a guardian of love and justice, but she's really not very good at it at all.
She's very flawed.
Yeah.
So no, like I enjoyed it. Like there wasn't anything like insanely complicated about the whole like, you know, oh, there's a new jewelry store in town and then it turns out there's a monster at the jewelry store. But like it's fun, you know? Like it was fun to read.
Well, and there's some other characters that are established that show up throughout the series that aren't guardian characters. Like the jewelry store isn't just any new jewelry store. It's actually her best friend's mom that owns that jewelry store.
Yeah, that's right.
And her mom was replaced with a monster. So that best friend you're going to see continually. Naru-chan is throughout the entire series. The teacher that she walks in on that gets mad at her is the same teacher that she continually interacts with.
Mm.
The nerdy geeky boy, Umino, she continuously interacts with. So they show up throughout the whole series, but they're like the normal average people. They aren't like superheroes in any way, but they're her original friends, which is I like
before
that.
She got cooler friends.
Well, you know,
I was going to say before she got cool friends.
So you have your regular friends and then you find out you're like this chosen guardian from space and then you get to hang out with other people like that. I mean, who are you going to pick? Like, come on, guys.
Hey, the you true have answer superpowers, is both. You have like a bunch of like cool equipment. Oh, and also a new group of friends.
Yeah, exactly.
I also love destiny. That the very first page, they establish that Sailor V's already been present in the city and stuff fighting crime. Which the Sailor V, codename Sailor V stuff, was actually written before this stuff. That was the original material. So that stuff in those comics are supposed to have been, you know, prequels to this.
Right. Already happening and have happened.
That's cool. Or one might say.
I like that kind of stuff.
Sailor Moon Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
And, you know, at the very end of this Act One, they introduced, I believe it's Jedi. They show him on the last page.
Oh, like, yeah,
who's
yeah.
Who's this mysterious man?
Mysterious Prince of Space. All right. Well, let's jump into Act Two then. Kieran, do you want to take that one?
So, yeah, Act Two. The aforementioned mysterious man, Jadeite, tells a woman that he will soon find the legendary silver crystal. Meanwhile, Luna tells Usagi that she needs to start finding her allies to defend against the enemy. By total coincidence, Luna jumps on the head of a girl called Ami, basically forcing her and Usagi to become friends. Ami is a huge nerd and the opposite of Usagi, attending a crystal conference to help boost her grades. Usagi, however, is keen to hang out and play video games, and Ami seems to be really, really good at video games. So good, in fact, that she actually wins the Sailor V video game and a pin pops out of the machine. Usagi then hits the machine until she also gets one. Later, Usagi picks up a disc that Ami dropped that belongs to the Crystal Conference. After hitting the computer for a little bit, a bit of a theme there, Luna and Usagi discover that the conference is actually designed to hypnotize people and trick them into looking for the legendary silver crystal. It's all coming together. Usagi turns into a doctor with her, you know, magical Sailor Moon transformation powers to infiltrate the conference. When things get dire, Usagi throws her pen up into the air and turns into Sailor Moon. But then when things get even more dire, Ami throws up her pen and becomes Sailor Mercury. And they cut the lecturer in half and are victorious.
Yes, they do.
They certainly do cut the lecturer in half, like clean in half.
Mm-hmm. It is funny how this book does get to the like stereotypical levels of violence, but they draw it in such a way that's like doesn't look gory or gross, or you don't really give it a second thought because it is similar in a weird ways to like video games. So like because you can see that influence of her being obsessed with the games and the arcade, but then some of the moves and stuff she's kind of taking straight from what would be like an arcade game or something.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. So one of the things I love about is like when she sees Ami, you know, it's originally like all her classmates are like, she's so smart. And, oh, she's really stuck up, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, she sees her with the cat and she's like, she's not like that at all. And then she's like, she's actually really cute. Because yes. Sailor Moon, you're in for a surprise, is in love with all her friends.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's like, she's cute. I'm going to make her my friend. It's totally how it works. It's great.
it is really cute that she's like, wow, this girl's really cute. I need to be her friend now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. Like, just saying. She's, yeah.
I also liked the part where she turns into the doctor. Even the cat is like, why did you choose that of all things? Like that.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me of that. It is very odd that she's like, she has this like weird instinctual knowledge of her powers where she was like, I need to get into the conference. I know, I'll just turn into a doctor with my Sailor Moon pin and no one will be the wiser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she looks the same. She's just in a costume.
She's just, like, yeah, she's just in a costume. Yeah.
She still looks like a 14-year-old girl. She's just a 14-year-old girl dressed as a doctor.
Yeah,
exactly. Someone at the conference is going to stop her and be like, oh, which parent are you with? Because
I like how she basically just runs in past the security and she's like, somebody called for an emergency, and bursts in the office and then immediately is like, gonna change into Sailor Moon.
She needed that disguise for all of 5 seconds. And then
those five seconds were really key to her overall plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the layout of like just basic comic stuff, which manga like with action can be, when it's in black and white like this, can make it a little tricky sometimes to follow action. But I have to say this book is really good about that. Like, you can always tell what's happening in a fight scene, because I've definitely read some other popular manga where with the black and white art, it's like so much going on that you're like, I can't even follow what is even supposed to be happening in these fight scenes. But the art is very good and very 90s, which I also appreciate. The anime face shape is like that weird, slightly off-kilter 90s look.
Yeah.
All right. So, Brittany, do you want to take part three?
Yes, I will happily take part three. So part three opens with the Dark Kingdom, and it's Jadeite, and he is being rebuked by Queen Beryl for failing. And I'd just love to say I've always been in love with Queen Beryl. She's fantastic.
Yeah, I'd say Queen Beryl is really cool.
like Queen Beryl's whole design is very aesthetically pleasing. So she's talking to him about, you know, the legendary silver crystal and how they need it, how it's a source of endless energy, how they can control the universe with it. And then, of course, is it Nephrite? Yeah. Nephrite's in the background, just, you know, mocking Jedi because that's what he does. So, and then meanwhile, while this is all going on, there's a Shonen priestess and she feels something bad, you know, there's these rumors and she just feels some evil. And they first also introduce the 6 o'clock demon bus. So, while...
Which we know will never pay off.
It's never going to pay off. No, so, they're just mentioning it in passing. While Usagi's sleeping at school, as one does, Luna wakes her up so that way she can listen in on like gossip and stuff. And they are planning on meeting up with Amy. That's where she first like hears about the 6 o'clock demon bus, how if anybody rides it, they disappear. It's the same bus. It leaves the same stop. It meets this like 4 or 5 way stop and disappears at 6 p.m. exactly every time. And takes everybody on the bus with it. So Luna tells them that they need to find the princess. They need to find the legendary silver crystal. So then Usagi's playing the arcade. She wins a cool prize because why not get prizes out of the games?
And wish arcade games that were video games.
Wish I could get prizes from arcade games.
So they get these cool watches and then Luna informs them they're actually remote communicators that the two of them can use to communicate with each other. So Amy's like, I have to go study. She has cram school and all that stuff. And she informs Usagi, like, you know, if you come with me, there's this pretty girl on the bus that I see every once in a while. And of course, Usagi's like, pretty girl on a bus, you say?
Pretty
yes,
girl.
Why, hello. I will come along.
Let's go.
So they start going. She takes the bus with her. And then when the other girl gets off, I love this part because Usagi's like, bye, you know, to Amy because Amy has to leave. She's like, I'm going to follow the pretty girl and totally just falls her off on this random stop where she doesn't know where she is because why not? So she follows her up and loses track of the girl, but she ends up at the shrine where it turns out the pretty girl is a shrine maiden. And she immediately gets attacked by her, which I love because, you know.
Yeah, she doesn't really waste a lot of time. She's just immediately like, something I don't recognize. I'm going to try and exercise this.
Yeah, it's great. They take, you know, so she runs into her there. She meets her, all that stuff. And then this other mom shows up crying about how her daughter disappeared, that she left that shrine that she would go to every day, that she disappeared on the demon bus. And, you know, Ray's like, I have no idea what's
don't
happening.
Send your kids home on the demon bus. Yeah, yeah, parents.
You know, don't
hot tip
them.
For all you parents out there. Don't send your kids home on the demon bus.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just, you know, don't take the demon bus.
Back in my day, we rode bikes.
Yeah. But apparently it's like supposed to be where the spot is, blah, blah, blah. So, and of course, then they reveal it's, of course, Jedi. Jedi is the one
that
taking the...
That slimy
piece of shit. Oh, my God.
So what he's trying to do is he is trying to lure them out of hiding, of course, because... Why not?
Well, he assumes that they have the silver crystal and they have no idea what's going on.
I like to think that what Jedi was doing is he was trying to get the prettiest girls onto the bus because he knows that Sailor Moon won't be able to resist a bunch of pretty girls on a bus.
That's fair. That's a good plan.
So they decide they're going to take this bus. So back to the shrine and everything.
Which
and
bus? It sounds like it's a pretty normal bus.
It's a very normal bus. So, you know, Usagi's just having a normal casual conversation on the bus with her cat, as one does.
Yes.
And suddenly the cat's like, you know, Luna's like, meow, meow. She starts acting really weird. And she's like, why aren't you talking to me? What's going on? And it turns out that Mamoru, who we were introduced to earlier in the series, is just sitting on the bus next to her and is just watching her talk to the cat. And she's like, yeah. And the first thing he says is, yeah, Luna, just talk.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you talking?
I like how she didn't notice the like 6'6" dude that she's met a couple times already and that is just like a foot away staring at her. Somehow she gets completely blanked on that.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when you get on the demon bus, like you're thinking about other things. You're
thinking about the demon driving the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, how'd you get here? You're not just a regular middle schooler. And it turns out he's not. He's a high schooler, of course.
That's the thing that's weird.
That's why he looks like he's like 30 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so he is a high schooler and he takes the bus to get back and forth to school, of course. You know, and he's heard of the weird stuff. And of course, she's looking at him. She's like, that profile. I recognize it. I wonder why. Then, of course, he's looking at her being like, that profile. I recognize it. I wonder why.
It's because they both have the Clark Kent / Superman style disguise.
Yeah.
It's like, you're wearing different clothes. You clearly can't be the same person. You have glasses?
Clearly you cannot be Tuxedo Mask. So, yeah, which is pretty great. And he's like, and even like, as he's looking at her, was like, Guardian of Justice? And she's like, what? And he's like, oh, nothing. I didn't say anything. Which is pretty great. Yeah, so anyway, she ends up getting off at the shrine, going and visiting Rey. Rey gets confronted by those same moms again. And then when she goes to leave, she decides to take that bus. Somehow, Rey ends up on the bus instead because Rey was going to try and stop her, but ends up on the bus. And then Sailor Moon sees it. She transforms into, of all things, a stewardess. She transforms into a flight attendant. So she can take the bus. Why she needs to transform, I'm still not 100% sure, because like it's all she so does weird, is chase she down never, the bus and climb through the back window in heels like she, versus, you know, normal shoes before.
Like the doctor one kind of makes sense because she like runs in, she's like, I'm a doctor, let me through. But it's not like she gets on the bus using the outfit. I think potentially they just wanted to put her in a stewardess outfit.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, she sees Ray Chan's getting captured, and she's like, we're going to turn into a stewardess and climb through this back window.
I do have to say, I did want her, as the series progressed, to just, like, keep turning into other professions. So, like, you know, later they'd be like, oh, like, the silver crystal must be, like, over there. And she's like, oh, well, I'm going to turn into a concrete pourer. And, you know, then, like, throws it up, and then she has, like, a big drum and, like, a bag of concrete. She's like, let's go, guys. And they're like, just turn into Sailor Moon, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know, it's so great. So in her effort to get on the bus, she leaves behind Luna and Tuxedo Mask. He catches Luna as Luna falls away from Usagi. And she's like, no, my cat and my man. And he, of course, saw her transform into the stewardess. Like, that's the first thing he said. She transformed right before my eyes.
Yeah, so, she's not like, good at hiding the fact that she has really, magic powers.
Really not. So, and so then she uses the communicator. She's able to get in touch with Rey and let, or I'm sorry, with Amy and let her know that her and Rey are both clearly in this other place. They went through this weird hole and now they're, she doesn't know where they are, but all the missing girls are there. Rey's there. Jedi's there. So Luna, who's, you know, knows a little more than she should all the time, has Amy take another transformation pen with her, a spare, if you will, and has both her and Mercury, or Mercury and Usagi, transform at the same time, which somehow brings Amy to Sailor Moon. So that way they could fight together. So then, of
there's
course,
lots of stuff that's just like they are connected in ways by, I'm assuming, supposed to be fate or something.
Yeah.
So it just always, it's like whatever the plot needs them to be able to do. It's like, okay, this is a weekly series. Let's just teleport them there.
Mm-hmm. Basically, there is a lot of stuff that's like,
and honestly, it's fine.
This needs to happen. You know what? It's going to happen.
Right.
It's a series about magical girls.
Yeah, exactly.
So at that point, you know,
there's magic and they can already, I mean, there's already stuff later with teleporting to the moon and back. Mm-hmm. So like, this is nothing.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So then of course they have to fight stuff. So they have to fight Jedi and he's, you know, he's holding Rey captive. And then of course, because he's doing that, the sign of Mars appears on Rey's forehead and that spare pen comes in handy.
And who knew?
They give it to Rey, and Rey is able to use it to transform into Mars. And what I love is, like, not only does she just Mars, she also has her demon, or her crows, which are Phobos and Deimos.
So were you calling them demons because demons? Of Golden Compass?
Yeah, demons, you know, crows. Well, you know, and I saw Deimos and my brain went demons because it does that. So yeah, she has her crows with her, which she had back at the shrine as well. But I love that her crows' names are the moons of Mars. So that's already their name. I'm dumb
and didn't put that together.
She already named them that. So, and of course, her powers are fire powers, which is very cool.
Is it though? I'd say it's hot.
It's very hot.
And now I'll show myself out.
Wow.
It counters Jedi because Jedi is like ice powers because even the bad guys have powers.
Oh, yeah.
They don't go to it a lot in the manga. They cover that a little more heavy.
Because he's so cool.
So they, of course, they destroy Jedi, and then they have to gather everybody up in one place, and they use their powers to be able to transport all the missing kids, all the missing girls, back to the bus stop that they had disappeared from. So they obviously, they found Sailor Mars. They're all excited because now there's three of them. You know, Rey's always had powers where she could see visions and things that nobody else had. And she's like, is it because I was a guardian or not? So, and then they show a few more of the four heavenly kings, which is they've introduced Jedi four, they've introduced Nephrite. And there are two more that will be introduced given time.
Mysterious.
All right. So that was Act 3. Which I think is where this series, like most comics, issue 3 is where they usually get really good.
Yeah.
And I would say this one does that as well. That seems to be a recurring thing I've found when we've been reviewing stuff is like, give anything you're reading at least 3 issues before you decide to continue, because that's usually where they're like, okay, we've established what's going on and now we can like really push it, you know?
Yeah. 100%. I think I enjoyed the first act, and the second act's like, you know, it's pretty good. But the third act is like super rocking, and I really enjoy, like the Rey and like the whole like demon bus, and you know, like it's very, it's very cool. And turning to the stewardess is stupid, but like it's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, turning into levity. The stewardess is fantastic, and it's totally something a 14-year-old would do.
Right, and it also, Luna even makes fun of her for doing. She's like, why a stewardess? Like, what?
Like, why did you do this? This doesn't make sense.
It doesn't help your...
She's like, leave me alone. I'm going to do what I want, Mom.
You're not my real mom. My cat.
My cat, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's pretty great.
Yeah, and it does. It incorporates a little bit of that, like... folklore, like horror, urban legendy type stuff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
One of the things I really liked about this. And then I have to say, the art when they defeat Jedi or any of the guys is always like weirdly horrific compared to the other things in the book.
Yeah.
It's like, now you're turning him to this like melting, emaciated, like skeleton face man as you're defeating him.
Well, they don't make it too clear. Like they kind of mention it in the previous two acts. The monsters are actually made of sand. So they're just like clay monsters made of sand. Okay. Like Power Rangers style.
Right.
So when they defeat them, they just change back into dirt, sand, that what have sense. You. Whereas Jedi isn't. Jedi's an actual person. Right. So him like being destroyed is much more horrific.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Makes sense. I did not think of that. But yeah, that totally makes sense.
So is there like a cut scene where Usagi is like, so Rey, I'm going to be honest, I've never smelled burning flesh before, but you've changed that for me. So thank you.
I know, right?
You've it's opened great. My eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty great. But I've always really liked Act 3. It's pretty great. And I love Usagi because she's so innocent. She's like, and she's truly like a true 14-year-old. Completely oblivious, talking to her cat, and then it's like, oh no, this boy next to me sees everything. You know, doesn't pay attention to the fact that she transforms directly in front of him.
Nah, that part's not important.
And like a true bi icon, she sees Rey and's like, pretty girl, I'm gonna follow her home.
And also like a true bi icon, she is a big dumbass as well.
Yes, right? Fantastic. I love her so much.
All right. I was checking. We had asked if people were, you know, reading along or anything like that. So we did get a couple of questions. We'll take a couple of them now. So from at Starlet Firefly asks, why is Seiya so much better than Mamoru?
Mamoru is is Tuxedo Mask.
Okay.
So Saya is from the Sailor Stars series, which is much later in the series. So as you go on through the series, they introduce more and more scouts. I mean, it's supposed to be that each planet has a scout associated with it, not just within our, you know, universe.
Solar system. That's the one.
Like across every planet. So the Sailor Stars are part of that extended universe. But Saya is great and is totally into Sailor Moon. Totally has the hots and is totally trying to steal Tuxedo Mask's girl. But they're great because in their non-transformed version, they are very much presented as a man. They wear suits. They look like a man. They act like a man. They present themselves as male. Whereas as soon as they transform, then they're presented as female, which there's several characters throughout the series that are that way, which is why I know a lot of women and a lot of people in general, I'm of the opinion, have always connected with Sailor Moon, is because there is representation there that just wasn't there at any other point.
Especially during these times. You are aware of, at least.
But a lot of people like Saya better. Mamoru is not actually a super loved character. There's a lot of shipping of Usagi with a lot of other characters.
That's fair.
And Saya is one of them. And that's fair, man.
Well, our next question follows right with that from Courtney Annie on Twitter. And she asks, why is Tuxedo Mask so useless?
Because he's the Prince of Earth.
Because he's a straight white male?
He's a straight white male. Well, in fairness, he's not white. He's Japanese, but he is straight and cis. So he is a straight cis man. Yeah. And he does have powers that they talk about like later in the series. And I think even in this, actually, they do talk about it in this arc some. But like compared to the scouts and the other guardians and stuff, like he's just not that powerful. Basically, he exists to be a boost and for Usagi.
There's a reason that there's that meme of him being like, my work here is done. And then Sailor Moon saying, but you didn't do anything as he's leaving.
He is her emotional support dog.
Yeah, that works. All right. Well, let's get into Act 4 then. Thank you for the questions before we do that. And if people want to continue to do that, we will always work them into the show if we can. And that is send them on Twitter at Inks and Issues or email us inksandissues@gmail.com. And we'll try and incorporate more stuff ahead of time so that people can actually, like, you know what we're talking about so they can send us questions. So thank you for doing that, people. We have one more from Logan, but I think it would fit better in a different segment. So we'll get to you, Logan. Don't worry. All right. So we'll jump into Act 4. So Act 4 opens with Luna deftly typing with her paws, which seems really advanced to me. Like, she's on the keyboard just going like crazy.
Really massive keys.
Yeah.
She's a very dexterous cat.
Yes.
One might say it's a porgonomic keyboard. That wasn't my best work. It wasn't my best work.
So she's looking up information on the Sailor Guardians and Mamoru Chiba. Little's known about him, and Luna ponders whether he is a friend or foe of the Sailor team. Dun, dun, dun. I also find it really funny that in the 90s, when this was written, early 90s, she's just already like, there's no Google yet, but I'm just going to Google Sailor Moon and see what comes, or Sailor Guardians and see what comes up.
But actually, though, it's just like, what if I go to www.sailorguardians.com? What do I find?
Yeah. Which I just found pretty amazing that it was a little ahead of its time there. The next morning, Usagi's mom is reading the newspaper, and the front page shows Sailor Moon solving the demon bus mystery as a big feature. And she also sees a report of Princess D from the D Kingdom arriving to show their national treasure. Hey, if you know what I mean. Usagi runs by late for school again. Running to school with a piece of toast in her mouth, like always. On the way to school, though, she passes all these cops. So she knows something bad's going down. but she doesn't have time to stop and find out what's happening. Arriving at school, Usagi sees Naru, who tells her the teacher has not arrived yet. Naru also knows that the cops on the street are due to the visit of Princess D from the D Kingdom, an area known for its diamonds.
Get it?
And they find out that a ball is going to be held at the embassy in her honor. So, you know that common thing where princesses go to the embassy and they have a ball?
It's here, too.
That happens. That good old trope. They wheel that one out.
The old princess at the embassy trope.
Yeah. So after school, all the scouts meet up and Luna tells them that they need to protect the princess because it's very likely that she has the silver crystal that they've been looking for and need to get before the bad guys do. And they think maybe that Princess D is the princess that they're looking for because the princess of the moon that they're supposed to all be guardians of, they have no idea who she is yet. They're like, maybe this princess is the princess. I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of other princesses around here.
Exactly. Meanwhile, in the Dark Kingdom, the warrior Nephrite learns of the D Kingdom treasure and thinks it may be connected to the silver crystal. So he has the same idea. And Queen Beryl, of course, is like, yeah, go find that crystal because the power can revive Jedi and then the Dark Kingdom can rule the universe. So she's like, yeah, I guess we could revive Jedi and then take over the world. So back at Usagi's house, her dad's getting ready for the embassy ball and Usagi's like desperate to come along. But her dad tells her, no, you got to watch it on TV. And leaves. Classic dad move. I'm always going off to cool events and telling my kids, no, just watch it on TV. Bye.
In fairness, he is a reporter.
Oh, is he? I forgot about that.
Is her dad a reporter?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's why he gets to go.
Okay, I think maybe he
might have been like a weapons dealer or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, black market.
Black market weapons dealer, yeah.
For his magazine.
Okay. Usagi decides to investigate and once again uses her disguise pen. This time it makes a little more sense, kind of. She morphs into a princess, but Luna is still like, this again. Like, why did I give her that pen?
She should have morphed into a fry cook and been like, there's a fry emergency, and then like burst into the ball. And people would have been like, well, you can't stop a fry emergency. You got to let her through.
Yeah, I mean, the princess thing kind of works until someone asks what you're the princess of.
And then you'd be like, I'm the princess of fries.
Yeah, exactly. This is adventure time, so she's the fry princess, right? So Amy and Ray are already at the ball when Usagi arrives. The soldiers are looking for the princess and notice, and by the soldiers, of course, we mean the sailors, soldiers, not just random, like,
the army.
Japanese soldiers wandering around. But Usagi, of course, is preoccupied with daydreaming, as per the usual. Mm-hmm. She wants to meet this beautiful princess because she's like, she's going to be beautiful and I'm Usagi. So therefore, I want to follow her and see where she goes. So she wanders around dreaming of joining the dance and just basically enjoying the ball rather than doing her gosh dang job of being Sailor Moon.
In fairness, again, she is a 14-year-old
this is
girl.
True.
This yeah.
is true.
No, this is
she's
true.
Literally an eighth grader.
Yep. So she's trying to enjoy the ball instead of working. But then someone spills something on her dress that is magic. I don't really get how this works, but it doesn't matter because she has to go rinse it off and in the process drops her handkerchief that she somehow has that is embroidered with her name.
Well, it's part of the princess costume, obviously.
Oh, well, yeah. Gosh. But would you embroider it with your own name if you were in disguise?
Of course, I guess Sailor Moon. It's her handkerchief.
Just had it in your pocket.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. These are such amateur mistakes we're making. We're supposed to be a professional podcast.
Of course, Mamoru is the one who picks it up. So he's like, if he hasn't put the pieces together yet, then he is as dumb as everyone else is.
I do feel really bad that it almost seems like everyone got an invite to this ball except for Usagi because right. Everyone is here.
Well, if you were in the right cram schools, you'd get into all the good events.
Luna comes out in a little tuxedo. He's like, oh my God, you should have said, like, I would have let you be my plus one. I'm so sorry.
Right.
So one of the things I love about her is she's just like, you know, she basically does the thing like squirrel and disappears.
Right.
And then realizes she's all alone and she's like, it's not any fun when I'm all by myself. And I can relate to that real hard.
So yeah, while she's dressed up like a princess, is all alone and sad, like you said. But then Mamoru / Tuxedo Mask whirls in and begins waltzing with her. He's wearing a tux and his mask, but it's not quite the Tuxedo Mask costume. But for she has
no idea who it is. Then,
right. She's still like,
exact same.
Wow. He's so similar. Maybe they're related. No, not the exact words, but they don't quite put the pieces together like you would expect them to. So eventually she's, you know, like, this has to be the same guy, right? And they dance for a while until Luna's like, hey, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, saving the universe and all. So she's like, I guess, and turns around and Tuxedo Mask is gone. But Luna's like, hey, we found Princess D, but she's not the princess that we were looking for. She's,
damn,
dare I say it, in another castle. Again, I'll show myself out. All right. So Princess D is preparing to show the D Kingdom treasure to the assembly, wishing she were as important as the treasure seems to be to the crowd, which, you know, that was like, wow, that's kind of insightful about this person and this young princess who's like, nobody actually cares about me. They care about this diamond that's the supposed diamond to be really cool. So yeah, while leading Princess D to the room, the attendant shows herself to be an enemy minion, and they take over Princess D's body in order to gain the treasure and the energy from the crowd.
All about that energy.
The princess runs with the treasure towards the balcony, and Usagi tries to catch her. However, the now unearthly princess flings her to the side and over the railing, and Tuxedo Mask reaches out and barely is able to save Usagi.
He actually does something useful.
I know. That's what he was really there for. But before he can pull her up, they both begin to slip. And Luna is like, hey, Usagi, remember that pen that gives you powers? Maybe you should use that.
Maybe you should use it. I'm just, you know, I don't want to tell you what to do, but.
I mean, I'm not your real mom, but they do the Mary Poppins and turn it into an umbrella that floats them safely to the ground. And then Tuxedo Mask is like, thank you, person who's clearly Sailor Moon, and then runs away. So Usagi officially turns into Sailor Moon and realizes she's no longer wearing her sweet tiara, which is one of her many weapons that she often uses to slice people in half. but then her body starts to feel warm and she gets a new tiara, so it's all good. And then when she goes back in, all the guests are being sucked into darkness by the enemy that's possessing Princess D. And Sailor Mars tries to do cool attacks, but they have no effect. Actual Tuxedo Mask has appeared by this point, and he's like, hey, Sailor Moon, the only way to banish the darkness is with a little light. Eh? The Sailor Moon is like, I have those kinds of powers, and uses the Moon Twilight Flash into the from her new tiara, and it basically destroys all the enemy shadow stuff that Nephrite created. And then everyone starts to wake up again, because they always have to end with the like, whoa, what happened to all the like people who aren't scouts or Tuxedo Mask, so that they don't know what's actually going on in the world around them. And Princess D is like Velma-ing it up, looking for her glasses. And one of the soldiers is like, oh man, if you take off those super nerdy glasses, she's hot.
He's like, ha cha cha, that like 10-year-old girl is really attractive without her glasses. And it's like,
turned I into also a like that it himself makes
in the head with a hammer.
I like that it also makes them wonder if Umino took off his glasses, would he be super hot?
And it's totally not true. It's great.
No, it's not. It's very not true.
So she gets the glasses back because she's like, yeah, I can't see without them. It's as if people wear them for a reason. And presents the treasure, which is not the silver crystal at all, but a 2,000 carat diamond statue of the queen of D Kingdom. So her mom?
The first princess of D Kingdom.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they also wear the giant glasses, yeah, which is pretty great.
Kingdom of D, The Will of D, One Piece, and Sailor Moon exist in the same universe. Confirmed.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Sailor Moon is like, boy, I sure am thirsty, and drinks all these random cups on the table and gets wasted because she's 14 and has never drank alcohol before.
Don't do that.
And falls into Tuxedo Mask's arms, and he kisses her against a pillar, and it's like, maybe don't do that when she's tipsy.
Yeah, don't do that either.
Not tipsy. She passes out.
Yeah. But they're also, they both feel like this is something that happened a long time ago.
So they're
foreshadowing slash pre-shadowing? I don't. And then Luna runs up and is like, hey, get away from her, you creep.
You fucking rapist?
As Jesus Christ. Should.
Get out of here.
And all she knows is that they're both after the silver crystal, and they don't know if he's an enemy or not, so she chases her away. And then they show a girl at the end who says, a storm is beginning. Dun, dun, dun. And that's the end of Act 4, which I feel like Act 4 was pretty packed compared to the last
Act
3.
Act 4 is very packed.
Had a lot more going on. So what did you think of Act 4, Kieran? Start with you.
I think I did quite like it. I'm not sure if I should say this now or like say it at the end, but I think I'll say it now. Hot take incoming. Get your oven mitts ready because this one is piping hot. Thank you for pretending to put mittens on. I think that Usagi and Tuxedo Mask's relationship is super dumb and I don't like it. And anytime they have like eyes across the room at each other or like whatever, I'm just like, oh my God, I don't care. Just like get this shit out of my face. I just want to see them cut people in half and throw their pens around. That is what I'm into. This is not what I'm about.
Yeah, it feels very forced compared to literally everything else in the comic.
Thank you.
I 100% agree. It is the worst part of the book. Brittany, your hot take on their romance?
Okay, so I was like this age group, middle school, early freshman.
Yeah, yeah,
When I first started consuming Sailor Moon stuff, and I started with, you know, season one, it was on Cartoon Network. I loved it. And the stuff didn't bother me there, but, like, you know, I was the age group it was targeted for, so I was like, oh, yeah, they're so dreamy. As an adult, I'm like, Member is okay. There's more interesting characters that she could have ended up with.
Yeah, like, I this is
but
why
I don't
I'm...
outright hate him either, and there's a lot of fandom that outright hates him.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, I hate him, and I'm like,
yeah, like,
page.
Whatever, it's fine.
Him as a character, I don't really have any like objection to, and like as a love interest, I'm like whatever. You know, he's like a sort of tallish, attractive guy with like a chin, so you know, like a 14-year-old girl would probably be into that, I assume. It's just like this comes up a lot more later. It's the whole like, he's taking my breath away because I feel like this has happened before. He's so true. And I'm just like, fuck, oh my God, I don't care. I just don't care. Like, it's because it's so like out of nowhere and he doesn't do anything to justify like this level of affection. So like I did really enjoy Act 4, I think is what I'm kind of going for here. But those bits, I was like, whatever, just literally dance with a cactus. I don't care.
That is.
What do you guys think of Act 4?
Brittany, what did you think of Act 4?
I always like Act 4. It's great. I mean, it's got princesses. It's got the treasure. I love that the treasure is just this weird ass, like, giant diamond bust of this weird girl. That's like, that's what everybody was all worked up about, was this weird thing. You know, it's pretty great. Plus, there's nephrite and stuff in it.
Yeah.
And for me, too, because my first consumption of Sailor Moon was the show. Like, I know a lot more about these characters. And, like, because the show was a Monster of the Week type show, they were able to explore their personalities a lot more in depth than they could in the mangas. So like even Mamoru is a more fleshed out character. So, you know, like they show it a little bit like them fighting before they realize who the other one is. Mm. Like when they're just their normal form of being a normal schoolgirl and schoolboy. But like in the show, they fight constantly. Like he calls her bunhead. She keeps throwing trash at him. They fight all the time. Same with like Ray and stuff. But whereas in this, they just they kind of do a couple times and then they're like, ooh, la la.
Yeah, that is exactly what they're like.
But, you know, Tuxedo Mask is a lot more useless in the show. So.
Wow. How's that possible?
Because he mostly just shows up and throws a rose at things. And he's like, ha-ha, I've helped.
Somehow.
Like, somehow. Just whereas at least this, he's like, no, dude, do your thing, girl. You're amazing.
Yeah. That's fair. All right. All right. We should probably jump into Act 5.
Yeah. Let's do it. So, Usagi dreams of herself in a foggy place with a man in the distance that looks like Mamoru, and I fall asleep reading. Anyway, Luna wakes up. Luna wakes her up, telling her she's going to be late again, and the rain covers the city, and Usagi heads out with her umbrella. On the way to school, Luna tells Usagi that she needs to act more responsibly. But she's like, whatever, I don't give a shit. I'm dreaming about boys.
So do I.
I mean, yeah, like, same. and by boys, I mean Tuxedo Mask, whom Luna has told her to stay away from because he's like, I don't know who this punk-ass bitch is. Like, we don't know if he's a friend or an enemy.
He's a bad influence and she's on in the my child, of the street just the cat. With a
She's in the middle of the street with a car barreling towards her when suddenly a girl runs out and knocks her away from getting hit by the car. And the girl is much taller than Usagi and wears rose earrings. At school, Naru tells Usagi and her friends about her cousin who's getting married. However, the groom mysteriously disappeared after staying late at work one night. But since a June bride finds happiness, they aren't too worried about it and wish that they could also be brides. Then the girl that saved Usagi earlier walks by. She's stopped by the principal since she's wearing her old school uniform, but explains that the new one is too small. Umino comes by and tells Usagi and friends that the new girl is a transfer student with the rumor of being kicked out of her last school for fighting. Oh my God. What a badass. Mm-hmm. That's not true. Don't fight at school. Don't fight at school.
Don't fight at school.
So by lunch, with the weather cleared up, Usagi heads outside to eat, and she sees the new girl and peeks around a tree, noticing her delicious-looking lunch. A baseball heads towards Usagi, but the girl jumps up and catches it before it can hit her. And she tells Usagi to pay more attention, and since she's looking at the food so longingly, she offers her some. While Usagi is eating, the new girl mentions everyone's too scared to talk to her and asks her about the stores in the area, including arcades. Ooh. After school, Usagi gladly takes her new friend to the video arcade. And while playing Sailor V, Ami and Motoki come in. Motoki introduces himself. I think, is he the guy who works at the video arcade?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
He's the blonde dude that works at
the video. He's the blonde version of Mamoru.
That's right. He's like, hello, I'm blonde Mamoru.
And I'm way more charming.
Way more charming and way more interesting. And more way cuter.
Okay, honestly, if Usagi had had like daydreams about this dude, I would have definitely understood it.
She did before she met Mamoru.
Exactly, and that's where I would have hoped this is going. But no. Anyway, the new girl introduces herself as Makoto. Ami begins to tell him about a rumor she's heard concerning the bridal shop Naru's cousin bought her dress from. It's supposedly haunted by the ghost of a dead bride who will seduce any guys that come near and possess brides. Wow, that sounds metal as fuck. Usagi, Ami, and Makoto then go to the Sendai Hill Temple to see Rei and tell her about the rumors. As Makoto is leaving, Rei predicts they found the next guardian. That night, the mannequin from the shop floats down and finds Makoto walking home and possesses him. The possessed Motoki finds Makoto and tells her to look into his eyes. Meanwhile, Mamoru is walking but senses something and snaps his book closed, and he begins to change into Tuxedo Mask. Just in case, like, you weren't aware, Mamoru is Tuxedo Mask.
I also imagine, by the way you said that, that he literally has to, like, go find somewhere that he can change into that outfit.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't have a magic pen.
just dropping his decks in an alleyway.
All these homeless people are like, dude, you got to stop coming into our alley. This is getting ridiculous.
This is really weird, man. I don't know what's up with the mask, but like, it's your choice, but it's really weird. Usagi is sleeping in her bed when Tuxedo Mask comes into her window and leads her with him. That's weird. Luna wakes just as they are leaving and calls Ami and Rei. Tuxedo Mask leads Usagi to Makoto and Motoki. Usagi notices the bride's ghost and communicates to Luna where the enemy is, because you'll remember they received communicators that allow them to bypass these kind of little bits in the plot. A groom steps into the scene, attracting the attention of the bride's ghost, and it turns out the groom is Usagi using the disguise pin when she morphs into Sailor Moon.
Okay, so I have to give her credit. She actually used it
In like a clever way.
She's like, she used a disguise clever, like you said, a clever way that actually worked on the enemy.
She made herself into a hot.
Along with Mercury and Mars, they tell the enemy to stop taking advantage of women. Makoto realizes this and realizes Motoki's seduction was not real. She picks the bride's ghost up over her head and the planet symbol Jupiter appears on her forehead. Luna tosses her pin and she transforms into the guardian of love and passion, Sailor Jupiter. However, the ghost is just the shadow of the real enemy, Nephrite. Sailor Jupiter sees him and attacks with Flower Hurricane, which blinds him. She then calls upon her guardian planet Jupiter and uses Jupiter Thunderbolt to destroy Nephrite. Whew, God. In the Dark Kingdom, Zoisite and Kunzite are the last two remaining warriors. Zoisite is upset over the loss of Nephrite, and Queen Beryl insists they need the Silver Crystal immediately, because, like, two of their people are dead. As Sailor Moon helps an exhausted Sailor Jupiter, Tuxedo Mask disappears into the night. Luna now realizes he brought Usagi here to help Makoto. Sailor Jupiter explains how Motoki looked like an old boyfriend who broke her heart at her last school. She transferred schools because she felt the need to fulfill something important. Being a Sailor Guardian. Luna brings out a crescent moon wand for Sailor Moon and tells her she must lead the Guardians and protect the Moon Princess and the Silver Crystal. And Usagi's like, fuck, man, I'm 14. This is a lot to take in. And that's the end of Act 5.
Yeah. So this introduces my favorite character, which is Sailor Jupiter. And if she's the trope that I seem to always like in any anime, which is the girl who is like, you know, everyone's like, oh, she's a badass, she's tough, but then secretly she's into like something cutesy, like cooking or cats or whatever it is. That's like, there's always a list that the trope hits. And being a, you know, a tall person who, you know, I guess I could come off as intimidating to some people, weirdly, Kieran can attest to that when he first met me, apparently. And
Was I intimidated by you when I first met you?
Not in person, online, I think.
Yeah.
I think that was for different reasons. But I can hashtag relatable to her. But also in the old, like, there's a lot of like Super Famicom games they did, of course, because, you know, it was the 90s. The brawler, like side-scrolling brawler that they did. I mean, they did several, but if you play as Sailor Jupiter in those, she actually does several like wrestling moves on the enemies instead of just the normal like punches and kicks, which I greatly appreciate. So,
like the Jupiter's elbow.
Yeah, exactly. She has great promos between her matches. She's going to go really far in this business is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, I really dug this one for that reason. Like, I'm like, oh, sweet. One of my favorite characters is showing up because of the like bits of episodes I had seen when Brittany was watching, you know, this show over the years. I've always enjoyed the dynamic within their group, which is like, you know, it's the each character is like, this is the smart person and this is the, you know, athletic person. And this is the one that's for some reason knows about ghosts. I do like how they already had that person on their team, though, so that they could be like, ah, a ghost is involved. Therefore, let's go talk to Rei. I really like this one. Brittany, what'd you think?
I love this one. It's great. You get to meet Jupiter. It's got some weird Rose Bride ghost story going. It delves into a lot of that. You've got Nephrite in it, who I love Nephrite. And the same problem with this that they have with the other characters, there's just not enough time to delve into, like, especially the bad guys. Like, you get so much more of them in the show.
Oh yeah.
Like there's whole arcs in them that don't exist in this at all. Like that are some of my favorite parts of the show. And, but you know, like the first time she meets Jupiter, she gets saved. And I love her. Like first thing is she has rose shaped earrings and she smells nice too, you know, and Jupiter, they introduce that she likes to cook. You know, like you said, your trope. And, she's definitely got the notice me senpai thing going, which is fantastic. Oh, they remind me of my old senpai.
Yeah. I forgot about
I'll tell
that.
You now, that is a recurring theme.
Right.
Everyone reminds her of her old senpai.
I do love the part where she's taller than the teacher and he's like, why aren't you wearing our uniform? And he's like, your school literally doesn't make it large enough for me. So she's just the only character who's never wearing the correct school uniform for the rest of the, like, their school never got their shit together enough to order a single uniform that's an XL, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it's pretty great. Plus, like, one of the things I love is if you actually do the research, she's only, like, 5'6".
Right.
She's just tall compared to everyone else. Like, compared to, like, Western culture, she's average height for a woman, but compared to, you know.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'5".
I was going to say, aren't you like about the same height or taller?
I'm a little shorter, but not by much.
So you're saying in a year, Korra will be taller than her?
Yes. Korra is going to be Sailor Jupiter. She's going to be a giant.
All right.
Yeah.
No, Kieran, do you have any other thoughts on Act 5 before we get into our final act of the episode?
Other than it was good? No.
Okay, excellent.
I love a ghost. So I enjoyed that there were like explicitly it is ghosts.
I like that this comic isn't afraid to be weird about that kind of stuff.
Nah, man, it's great.
Yeah.
Like you're already dealing with like moon powers and magic pens that can transform you. So why not have a ghost or two? Am I right? Mm-hmm. All right, Brittany, did you want to take Act 6?
Sure. So this one starts off with Sailor Moon transforming back into Usagi so that way Luna can give her new item, which is her crescent wand, which is very cool. And she's like, I'll show you how to use it later.
Right. She just seems to do that a lot. She's like, hey, this is gives you godlike powers. I'll show you how it works later.
Don't worry, we'll use it later. So, and she lets her know that her new mission is at this point is she's the first guardian. She is, you know, the leader. And since there are now four of them, she needs to lead them. She needs to find the princess and she needs to find the silver crystal and they need to protect the princess. So the next scene is Mamoru waking up and he's had that silver mystical silver crystal dream again. It's the same dream he always has. And every time it's also he sees a woman with long hair every single time. And right before he sees her face, he wakes up.
Who could it be?
Who could it be?
Oh my God. Yeah. Who literally could it be? Wow. Any I'm really of these curious five about characters. The resolving of this storyline.
So then Luna comes into the kitchen to see what's going on. And Usagi's off to school. And, you know, there's this big news article that they're reading that's all like, the man of mystery, Tuxedo Mask. And where's the mystical silver crystal? And, you know, and Sailor Moon and Sailor B.
Basically, their cover's completely blown is what you're saying. Because the newspaper is like, hey, there's real superheroes in our city now, guys.
And they're all searching for this thing. So then Usagi meets up with Amy and with Makoto. And she tells him how she's also been having these dreams. So they keep waking her up because they're like, you're actually on time.
Yeah.
Which is part of the thing I love is they're like, you're on time. What happened? So and she's like, I've been having bad dreams lately. Okay. And then, of course, they bump into Mamoru and he calls her Bunhead. And then she's making faces at him. And it's like, what's great is by this point, they pretty much know who the other one is.
Right.
And her first instinct is still to make faces at him. She's like, bleh.
I'm just saying, he better watch his mouth when Sailor Jupiter's around because he might get like suplexed in the next week.
So then, you know, Amy recognizes uniform. He goes to a really prestigious school. And then she's like, he's so rude. Usagi is. She's like, oh, he's such a jerk. And she's like, do you like him, Amy Chan? And she's like, no, I think I prefer. And of course, they're all thinking of the arcade guy.
Yeah. I think I like the blonde version who's actually nice to us. Yeah.
Which is great. So then, you know, she changes the topic to the newspaper headlines. So then Luna calls the newspaper office to find out, like, what's going on. She learns that Tuxedo Mask sent a recording to all the mass media about the Silver Crystal and that all of Japan is now talking about it. He's trying to get information so that way he can try and figure it out. And then the same time you've got Kunzai and Zoisai are also trying to find it. They love it because Sailor Moon, Tuxedo Mask, all the humans are fighting over it. And then, you know, you've got Queen Beryl, who's like, it's not a laughing matter. So.
Always bringing us down.
Yeah. And Zoisai is like, oh my God, like, chill. Like, fucking hell. Like, can we not just, like, relax for 2 seconds?
So, yeah. So then, of course, Zoisite's like, I'll do it. And so he goes, he says he's collecting energy. And he'll collect
That's how he sounds.
Just like that. Yeah. I'll do it. I'll do it. He's like, I'm going to collect everything. And then, you know, there's more about...
All I can think now is that he's a Muppet, but everyone else is just a normal person. But for reason, Zoisite is just, hey guys, I'm Zoisite, and I'm going to go find the crystal now.
He basically is, so... So the girls have a meeting at the game center, as they always do regular game
constantly.
Place. And so
I don't know how that place is still in business because they are literally the only customers. I guess Sailor Moon drops like $50.
They drop a lot of
like
change
a day there, so that probably helps.
Yeah. And then everybody but Sailor Moon, they're like, yeah, he's probably the enemy about, you know, Tuxedo Mask. But Sailor Moon's like, maybe he's not good.
But he's so dreamy.
In fairness, she does always want to believe the best in people.
That's true.
That is very much her character. Yeah. She's always like, can't we all love each other?
She does try and convince enemies of that quite often.
Oh, yeah. No, like her.
Like, just be chill, man. We'll all be friends.
That's really all she wants.
Let's all go to the arcade and win some pens.
So, yeah. So then they're talking about the Silver Crystal. So, she, you know, Luna's like, if she claims it, and they're like, who's she? And so that's when Luna explains to them that the crystal is powerful enough to destroy a planet. It's an extremely powerful source, and if used improperly, could be a very powerful weapon against them. So she's talking about the Silver Crystal and how the princesses of the moon's royal bloodline and how they need to find them. And they don't have time to wait, that they need to find it. And that she was sent to them from the moon in order to awaken them all. You know, which of course the girls are like, the moon's classic royal bloodline. So, because, you know, they didn't realize that. And she's like, you are Sailor Moon. I have a moon on my forehead.
Come on.
I'm named Luna. She's like, it takes too long to explain. Once you fully awaken, you'll know everything. And until then, we just got to keep finding things. So, you know, they keep... She's, of course, goes right back to playing her video games, as, you know, I
of
would
course.
Do.
It's like, nah, saving the world too hard. Back to my video game.
So, and then she notices while she's playing her game that the weapon that Sailor V is using is her new Crescent Wand, which of course makes her wonder, is V-Chan also a Guardian of Justice? So she's like, is she also one of us? Have we just, you know, just not met her yet?
Have we overlooked the existing superhero who dresses exactly like us for some reason?
Yeah, I know, right? In fairness, she does have a red mask.
True. And Sailor Moon, that is one thing that I think is kind of weird. Like, she has a mask as part of her costume for the first couple acts, and then they just stop drawing it.
Well, you know.
And she's always like, my mask, and then takes it off. Like, she always does that. It's like how Naruto only has goggles in like that first little bit, because the guy was like, this is way too much work to draw these damn goggles every time.
Pretty much. You know, and then Amy mentions that they used to see Sailor V in the news a lot, and she hasn't been in the news lately, like at all. They just aren't hearing anything about her. So, yeah. So then, of course, you know, Luna's like, that's a good point. I'll look into it.
their crack detective is the cat, and I love that.
I know, right?
Because the cat is Luna's actually competent and actually like is good at tracking down information for them and stuff, which I just that always cracks me up.
But, so Zoisai decides to take a book take a cue from Sailor Moon's book and transforms himself into looking like a woman to go on a TV show and become like an expert on the silver crystal. How he's some kind of professor. And
like how he saw Sailor Moon transforming for no good reasons and was like, two can play at this game.
I too shall still transform. I shall transform into a pretty lady. And so then they're talking about the silver crystal, like, you know, and he kind of BS's this way through some facts in order to try and get like all the people looking for it. He wants people looking for it. As much as he can. And he's also going to drain their energy. So he presses
a button and starts draining all their
energy through the TV screens. And I'm pretty sure I've seen a Doctor Who episode about that.
Total ripoff.
In Fence, this came first.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Doctor Who totally ripped off Sailor Moon.
And then Luna immediately is suspicious. She's like, an expert on the silver crystal? I don't think so.
Yeah, from Earth? I mean, come on.
So they notice, you know, like all the machines and stones have stopped working, like everything, none of it makes sense. So obviously they're all cued in that something's wrong. You know, people are collapsing, nothing makes sense. So they go to the game center and Luna says something into the arcade machine and it like slices a thing and there's these stairs leading down into a basement that nobody knew about. And it's like this giant command center down there. And it's a computer that's connected to the main computer on the moon. It's everything they need in order to investigate everything. You know, just, you know, what we always have under our arcade centers.
Yeah.
Giant command centers for these Sailor Guardians.
That's one of my favorite tropes in these types of books is the like ridiculous base that is just barely hidden from view from everyone else.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So they figure out that all the energy is converging on one point. So they're like, okay,
I just imagine the blonde arcade man is like, oh, Street Fighter just came out. Better replace this old Sailor V. Oh my God.
They can't replace Sailor V. It's the only thing his customers spend money
on. That's true.
Yeah.
So they realize all the energy is going towards Tokyo Tower, which broadcasts TV signals. So they're like, obviously they need to go to Tokyo Tower. So they find Usagi, they find the other, or, you know, Amy says they need to find Usagi and the other so that way they can go. And then the next scene is like Usagi, she's feeling lightheaded, she's getting weak, she collapses, and Mamoru comes to save the day. And he's like holding her and he's like, what's wrong? And then she feels her energy start to come back because that's his secret power is he has like very mild healing powers.
Gotcha.
Not a lot. Just a little bit.
Just enough.
He's like, enough to be useful
if
right
you come
now.
Over here and hug me for like an hour, you'll probably feel better.
If you pass out or mildly inconvenience, I could make you feel better. which is great. So he confesses that Smith, this is his fault. That, you know, he didn't think things through. And, that he needs to also find the silver crystal, but he doesn't know much about it, so just knows that he needs to find it. And then he's like, you need to transform, you need to be Sailor Moon. I can't fix this, but you can. So, like, even he's like, yeah, I'm a punk, I can't do anything, but you, Sailor Moon, you kick ass. I need you to transform so you
I ain't
can.
Shit.
Because I can't do anything. Which is pretty great. So then Amy, Luna, and then, so then of course she does transform because why wouldn't you? So then Amy, Luna, and Ray, transform as well. They go to the station and while Luna stays behind at the command station to help, while the girls go to the stuff. So then they get in contact with Sailor Moon. They let her know where they are, that, you know, she needs to go. So, and it, you know, of course, Sailor Moon's just doubting herself the whole time. She's like, I can't conjure mists. I can't make flames. I can't make storms. She's like, I'm just a coward. Nobody needs me. There's nothing I can do. I have to have Luna to help me with everything. And then the Tuxedo Man's Max is like, you can do it, Sailor Moon, which is apparently all she needs to be able to do.
She just needed a cheerleader. So.
She does. He's her hype man.
Yeah, basically. It's his one job.
His one job is to be her hype man. So yeah, then her her moon crescent rod shows up. She can feel the power and she's like, okay, maybe I can do this. So then she uses it to bring everybody who's fainted, everybody who's shriveled up, all of this stuff to be able to bring everybody back, which is pretty cool, I have to say. So they all start. So
basically, she reverse spirit bombs the whole world.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it takes so much energy that she passes out again. So, you know, he takes her. He helps her and picks her up. His like crazy pocket watch thing falls in her lap. She wakes up after having been unconscious and she is at Mamoru's house. So. And she has his pocket watch and it's all broken. And she's like, who am I? Where am I? And turns out she is at his house and she wakes up in his bed after she transforms back into her normal self. Dun, dun, dun.
Right. Dun, dun, dun.
And that's the end of Act 6. And that's the end of what we're covering this episode.
Oh my gosh.
So what did people think? It'd be
really
think
dramatic if I cared a little about the relationship.
Book one.
I'm sorry.
Kieran, you have thoughts about this relationship. Now, what are your thoughts on book one?
I did actually really enjoy it. Like, honestly, like their relationship aside, everything else in the book is really, really solid. Like the girls is like really fun, and you know, the story like, you know, has like a good pace, and like, you know, it's really interesting, and the art's really cool as well, and like it's, you know, it's very classic. Like it's especially one of those things, like if you've read a bunch of other manga or you've watched a lot of other anime, you realize like this is kind of like one of the OGs for a lot of like tropes and designs and stuff that you see like coming later. But God, I just do not care about their relationship. I'm so sorry.
That's fair. Brittany, your thoughts on volume one?
I always liked this story. It's such a good story. It's such a good starting point for Sailor Moon. And she's so innocent and like, And like any 14-year-old girl that was suddenly given magical powers that doesn't know what's going on, she has all the doubts that a normal person would have. Like, how would she think that she's amazing? I mean, what girl at that age wouldn't be like, I can't do anything. Like, my friends are so much cooler than me. They have, like, these actual elemental powers, and mm-hmm. I'm just, like, here. Like, what do I have?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I really enjoyed this first half because I think it did a excellent job of setting up all these characters and the world they live in as having like that mundane, like day to day going to school, hanging out with your friends, but mixing that with the fantastical magical elements. And like you said, it's there. You can, when you read it, you realize, okay, this is had such longevity for a reason, because a lot of these tropes that are things that are tropes now, it's like you go back to this and you're like, okay, I can see where, yeah, I'm sure there's other stuff if you went back even further that, you know, I'm not a manga historian, so I can't be like, well, back in 1963 there was a you know, like there probably was, I don't know. But you can see where a lot of these tropes started. And it's funny because reading this, and I'm a huge fan of the Steven Universe cartoon, which has now finished, and like I always knew that this was a huge influence on it, but oh my god, once you go back and reread this, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is like a lot of stuff influenced that show from this, and a lot of other like what are now considered classic shows and mangas and stuff. So yeah, I think it was a really easy read and an easy recommend. Like, you know, basically like, I'm looking for something to read. Like, have you ever read Sailor Moon? Well, no, because I assume I know what it is. It's like, that's fine. You probably do, but read it anyway. It's good.
Well, and it always gets the wrap of, well, it's a girl's manga. It's like, well, I mean, yeah, sure, whatever. But like, I mean, actually just read it.
That was the target audience, but if writing is good, then writing is good.
Mm. Yeah.
The writing is good. Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, it being a girl's manga, boy's manga, whatever, it doesn't make it not good.
Yeah.
Like, it's only a girl's manga in that it's girl characters.
Yeah. Like,
other than that, it's an everybody manga. They're unique characters. They all have different personalities. They all have different stuff going on. And it only gets better as it progresses and you get to actually see the characters.
Yeah.
Be the characters.
I guess that would be my only complaint with first volume is because the chapters are so relatively short. I feel like I want to spend more time with the characters and they don't really get a chance to yet. So again, yeah, as you mentioned before, how she wanted to kill them off at the end. I'm like, wow, I'm really glad she didn't because she gets to delve into these characters a lot more because she actually like continued writing more stories for them and stuff. So, all right. Well, I think that's going to end it for this episode. Next time we will be covering the rest of this story arc. So that's Act 7 through, what is it, 14?
14,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So if people want to read along, they can send us messages about it, questions, comments, to our Twitter at Inks and Issues or email us inksandissues@gmail.com. Kieran, where can people find you? Actually, Brittany, where can people find you? You're the guest. Kieran, you have to wait. I'm sorry.
Okay.
How dare you? I will.
So you can find me on the Twitterverse at Brittany Gregory.
Yeah.
It's real hard to find.
It's super difficult.
The hardest part is just making sure you spell my name right.
That's true. Brittany is one of those names where there's your way, which is the correct way.
The correct way.
And then there's about 15 other ways. Kieran, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Mr. K_Bennett. Or you can check out my D&D podcast for Crits and Giggles. That is at 4CNG podcast.
Your group, sorry, before you go to me, you recently started a Patreon for Crits and Giggles.
Oh, yeah, we did. Patreon.com/for Crits and Giggles. So there's like stuff on that already. We haven't really like pushed it that much. At this stage, but if you want to give us like a dollar or something, that'd be really cool. Yeah,
I figured I'd let you inform people that
thank you.
Need more Kieran in their lives that they can support their your other show that way. You were about to ask me where they can find me, and I was about to tell you how dare you ask me that. No, you can find me at A Real Jonah on Twitter, and I mostly have been. Just kind of, you know, doing my normal posting goofy stuff on there and not much else to report as far as like, you know, streaming and stuff right now. I'm trying to get my internet situation figured out so I can start streaming again. Otherwise, thank you all for listening and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. I love you.